and I reckon.
Yeah.
Woo!
High energy. I haven't done anything this weekend, so I feel like I'm just, like, low energy, because that's how I've been all weekend, because it's just been terrible weather.
You know what? It's sometimes really important to take those, like, chill days,
I needed though. It. Erin and I watched, which I've already seen, but she had never... She started, but never finished, the whole season of Bly Manor, Haunting of Bly Manor. And I cried again. but we watched it all in a day yesterday, because it was just, like, shitty weather. And then we got, like, Italian cold cut sandwiches, and then made that, like, TikTok slaw that everybody's been doing. It's, like, lettuce, onions, mayo, oil and vinegar, all these spices, banana peppers, and you, like, kind of chop it up and mix it all together, then put it on the sub. So good.
I have not seen that at all.
So good. You have to be on food talk.
I was going to say, I think you're on a different side of food talk than me.
God knows where I am.
I'm on, like, Asian side of food talk.
I'm on, like, I don't know. I don't even think my For You page knows what I'm on. Like, it's, like, something different every video. Like, I get, like, true crime stuff. I get, like, horror movie stuff. And then I'll get, like, random food stuff and, like, random trending dances. I'm kind of all over the place.
I mean, what you're explaining sounds really good because it sounds like all the things that I would already put on a sub, right?
Yeah. And then it's just kind of like a slaw type mixed together.
Mm-hmm.
And it just...
I guess that each bite is more consistent. Mm-hmm.
So. And it's just really flavorful. We got, like, the hoagie oil and vinegar that comes, like, together, and it has, like, all basil, like, spices in it. So good.
Oh, yeah.
Ugh.
That's, like, a very, like, New York thing, for sure. I've never seen that anywhere else, but it's very New York.
Loved it. But it was the perfect, like, rainy day just watching Bly Manor because it has that creepy, like, dark atmosphere. And she had to, at the end, she was like, well, that was depressing. Like, she was like... I feel like I've been, like, thrown all over the place today because it's, like, it's pretty scary at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And then it turns into more of, like, how they say it's not a ghost story, it's a love story. And I cried again. But I didn't cry like I did the first
lesbians.
Time.
Because lesbians.
Right. And the first time I was, like, single and sad. So, like, watching it and, like, seeing how they, like, loved each other, I was like, I'll never have that. And now watching it with someone, it's, like, different. But at the same time, Erin was like, it's also... still sad because, like, it's about, like, losing the person. You finally find this love and then you lose them. So I'm like, yeah, that's also true. It's depressing.
That's how I felt at the
Spoiler
end.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Well, it's been out for, like, 2 years. Like, you don't...
If you haven't seen it, you should.
I feel like people should only give spoiler alerts up to, like, a year or something. Because, like, sometimes I'll be watching, like, I'll be on Harry Potter TikTok or something and somebody will talk about how... somebody has died or something, and people in the comments are just like, oh my god, spoilers. I'm like, these movies have been out for
I don't know what you
decade.
Want me to do, so I'm going to talk about it eventually.
You don't get to be like, spoiler alert! Like, no, you don't get to anymore. Like, it's like, just like the way that I talk about Game of Thrones. Oh my god, also last night I had this realization, I don't know if you saw my Instagram, but like, no one told me that House of the Dragon finally had like a release date.
I don't watch Game of Thrones, so I don't know. Sounds great.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited. I was, because I started watching The Staircase, not the documentary,
HBO
one. The HBO one, yeah. Which is very interesting.
This is the next case that they're going to beat to death.
I know.
With, like, doing another and
which,
another.
Like, I feel like Michael Peterson has already been beat to death, for sure, but,
right.
Like, that's
also
fine.
Who I don't remember who the actor is that played him, but he sounded just like him.
It's Colin Firth.
Okay.
Yeah, well, and he looks just like him, too, which is very weird.
Like, I remember the ad came up on TikTok, and all the comments were like, why does that guy sound like that, blah, blah, blah. And then people were saying, like, if you would have watched, like, the documentary, that's literally how he sounds.
Speaks,
like,
yeah.
That's how it is. So he did a really good job, I guess.
Yeah, that documentary is, like, way too long.
Yeah. Oh, my God. They drug out the, like, trial portion. I was like, I'm falling asleep. I, like, tried to watch it, because, like, I think... When it first came out, I had watched it, and then when it started to get to the trial, I started getting bored, and then, like, dropped it off, and then I tried to, like, do it again, and I was watching it on the treadmill when I would go to the gym, because I'm like, whatever, it'll pass the time, and I still got so bored at the trial section. I'm like, it's, like, just too much. They could have made it into, like, one, maybe two episodes, and it was, like, five.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It was drug out.
Way too long, for sure.
Also, who does, what is her name?
Toni
Collette. Who does she play in it?
She plays Kathleen.
The one
Kathleen Peterson, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I knew she was in it, and she's so good. I love her.
Yeah, it's very interesting, because the way that they have started to do the show is the way that they have laid out the show is that it's three separate timelines. So you get the past, you get the past, which is like 4 months leading up to her death. Mm-hmm. Then you get the quote unquote present, which is like, you know, you start on the night where she died and then move forward from there. And then you also get the future where, you know, we don't see a ton of the future, but we've seen a little bit of it here and there. I think it's great, but of course, as with any of these like dramatized true crime stories, it is very dramatized for sure. We're in the middle of Pride. Happy Pride. And with that being said, we're doing a lot of cases and episodes that are around LGBTQ+ issues/cases. Yeah. So Miss Freya, what are we doing this week?
So this case is actually one that I hadn't heard of before. I just kind of typed in because I feel like Pride, even when you talk about like gay panic and like when you search like LGBT true crime cases and stuff like that, it's a lot more like gay men that come up for some reason. I mean, men are just favored in society in general. 100%. Not that, you know what I'm saying.
I was like, the patriarchy, yes.
Yeah, like they're just more like, I don't know. But so I typed in like lesbian true crime cases to try to narrow down the field a bit more because I wanted to make sure we're kind of covering different ends of the spectrum during this month. Mm-hmm. And I found this one that caught my eye because it happened right in Park Slope, Brooklyn. Mm. So I was like, oh, I've never heard of this one. I'm in Park Slope a lot because it's kind of between Aaron and I, and we go out there all the time.
And it's a beautiful area.
It is so nice.
So nice.
And I'm going to go, I like went into a rabbit hole in the history of Park Slope just because like, I was just curious about like the neighborhood and how it came to be and like stuff like that. So sure. I went to a little bit of a rabbit hole, but I just briefly kind of touch on it in the beginning, but it should be pretty interesting, I think. But I found some like old pictures while I was looking, and it's just like crazy. Like I found a picture from Bay Ridge as I was looking from like the late 1800s. And it was so like weird to look at it then and like to see where it is now. It's just very,
I mean, crazy. We're currently sitting, like, 100 years ago was essentially just, like, farmland.
Yeah.
Like, there were a couple of buildings here and there. Like, I think this building was built in, like, the 40s, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it is pretty wild. Like,
yeah.
You know, because, you know, you just think of New York as, like, always being, it's always been there. It's always, you know, it's always been the way that we picture in its modern take, but girl,
history's wild.
History, you know, you are so right. History is wild. It is the more so you wild.
Know. The more you know. And now I feel like I know a lot more about Park Slope, which is interesting. So let's jump in.
All right, let's go.
All right, so 34-year-old Sylvia Lugo and her girlfriend, 28-year-old Amanda Leach, lived in the Park Slope neighborhood of Brooklyn. For those who aren't familiar with Park Slope, it's a very nice area known for its tree-lined streets and brownstones. In the late 1880s, Park Slope attracted Brooklyn's well-to-do who wanted to live near Prospect Park. And Prospect Park was actually designed by Vaux and Olmsted, who previously worked on Central Park. However, they fixed all the design flaws when making Prospect and considered that to be their true masterpiece. Which I didn't know about that.
Prospect Park is really gorgeous.
It is. I'm not too far from it. I'm like a 30-minute walk, which isn't bad at all. Or like a couple stops on the train. And it's just really nice. I feel like it's not as big as Central Park, but I still haven't even like touched the, like I haven't been to all of it because it is still pretty big.
Well, and then there's all the controversy about like Central Park and how there are literally, like, black and brown neighborhoods that are demolished underneath Central Park. So, Park Slope is the crown jewel of New York City, apparently.
Who would have known?
Who would have thought?
And so, and you can tell that Prospect Park was, like, really, people wanted to be near it. Because if you walk kind of, like, around the border, there's a lot of mansion-looking houses for the times. Now, these aren't mansions that you think about, like, in the Hollywood Hills or, like, big, like, sprawling ones. But for, like, New York sizing, these are, like, mansions.
Like, for those of you who have watched The Gilded Age on HBO, think about that. Like, think about like brownstones, but significantly like bigger.
Right.
And just very opulent and like,
Actually, so not that long ago, went to a, it was like a board game night and they held it in one of these old like brownstone mansions. And Erin's teammate on softball actually, like she runs it. So we were able to like wander all through the floors and all through the rooms. And it's like, it's definitely, you can tell that it, how old it was by like the way it's built. It's like doors went into other rooms. And like, I feel like they were very like separated, but also connected by doors all over the place. It's like a maze.
Yeah.
And it was like very creepy and had like some of like the original like paintings and like paintings of the people who had lived in the house. And I was like, this is creepy, but I like it.
Yeah.
It was very cool to like look through them, but they're very big. They're bigger than they look on the outside.
Oh yeah. 100%.
So yeah, these mansions go all along the border, but after World War II, many wealthy residents fled to the suburbs and the neighborhood became a lot more working class, and it gentrified more throughout the 70s and 80s. And in the 1980s, many lesbians actually began moving to Park Slope. When I was watching some shows on this case, which there was like two different shows I could find on this case, like little episodes. One was, I think it was called like In Cold Blood. I have it on the resources, so you guys can see that there.
Like Capote in Cold Blood?
I don't know. It was something about blood.
Okay.
Cold, I don't know.
Cold, maybe Cold Blooded or something.
I don't know.
Who knows?
But it'll be in the show notes.
Great. Perfect.
But they said basically like a lot of the gay men were buying up the West Village or like taking up and a lot of the lesbians didn't make as much money. So they went over to Park Slope because it was more affordable. The pay gap was apparent there.
Oh, weird. who could have imagined?
Yeah. So they began moving. There was like a huge lesbian community in Park Slope. And since 1993, the Lesbian Herstory Archives has been located in Park Slope as well.
Sorry, this is just like, did you ever watch Billy on the Street?
Yes.
Okay, like, I don't know if you remember that clip where he's like, let's go lesbians, yes. Let's go. Let's I just go imagine lesbians. All of them being
then
like, let's
going
go
to
lesbians.
Park Slope. Let's go lesbians.
Let's go lesbians. Let's go. Let's go lesbians.
I love that clip. It's so funny.
Just like a gaggle.
I love Billy on the Street.
Oh, I'm it's ridiculous so and so funny. He's so funny.
So the neighborhood had a reputation for progressive politics and was more affordable, like I said, than anything in Manhattan, which is what drew them to this location. I couldn't find a ton of background about Sylvia and Amanda, but I'm sure this was somewhat of a reason for their choice to live in Park Slope. Mm. Sylvia was a factory worker who came from a large family, and she seemed to be well-liked and a kind friend. Amanda grew up in New Jersey and was a social care worker in the foster care system. They were both avid softball players. Amanda was a pitcher and Sylvia was a catcher, and they were looking forward to their upcoming season. They played right in Prospect Park, which there's still a ton of not only gay, like all different kinds of leagues that play in Prospect Park. Erin actually plays on one of the, like, I don't know if it's, I think it is specific, or I think it leans at least like LGBT. But
sure.
Then again, a lot of lesbians play softball as a stereotype, but if the shoe fits.
Look, I didn't say it, you did.
If the shoe fits. All right, so, but on the night of July 5th, 1995, their lives were turned upside down. Sylvia and Amanda have returned home a little after midnight from a trip. So I'm guessing it was a 4th of July trip because this was on the 5th. Mm-hmm. And they were unpacking their car. On the last trip to the car, Amanda had noticed two men across the street watching them. And one of them started to cross the street. And as they came back in with their things, the man ran up behind them, pulled out a gun, and pushed them into their apartment. He then forced Amanda to tie Sylvia up and took Amanda in the other room where he began to sexually assault her. Sylvia was able to free herself from the ties and ran to the room to try to help Amanda. And as she ran in the room, the intruder shot Sylvia in the head. But Sylvia still managed to get up and continued to try to stop him when he shot her again, killing her. Amanda fought back as he tried to continue assaulting her, biting him and trying to get the gun from him. During the struggle, she was shot in the leg. The attacker tried to fire at her again, but the gun jammed, so he grabbed jewelry and the keys to their car and fled the scene. Sylvia, like I said, ended up dying from her injuries, and Amanda's wounds were treated before being questioned by police on what happened. So a bolo, or be on the lookout, was put on their car. Amanda described the attacker as a Latino male around 5'5 and 150 pounds with a thin mustache and wearing a baseball cap. But almost immediately, the main detective on the case, Joe Heffernan, doesn't believe Amanda's story. He claimed that the apartment didn't look to be the scene of a violent struggle, they couldn't find fingerprints, and they said the location of the shell casings from the gunshots didn't align with the story Amanda told. They also couldn't find the restraints that Sylvia was tied up with. They weren't able to find any witnesses to the incident, and no one reports hearing anyone flee the scene that night. Amanda talks about being questioned over and over again while in the hospital, and this had me thinking, if Amanda was questioned almost immediately after the incident, why wasn't it taken into account that she had just been a victim of sexual trauma, witnessed her partner die in front of her, and was on pain medication for being shot in the leg? Like, I'm sure after such a stressful incident, it must be hard to really, like, line up every detail and get everything exactly right. Because I'm sure it was chaotic. Trauma does a lot of things to people.
Right. And also being in shock on right. top of that. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she was shot in the leg, sexually assaulted, and watched her lover die in front of her, her partner.
Mm.
Like, that's a hell of a lot to go through.
Yeah.
And to be able to be questioned, like, right after.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm surprised that they didn't want to attend to, like, her wounds first more.
Well, I think they did, like, at least, like, stitch her up and stuff, but it was, like, she was on pain medication, and it was, like, immediately in the hospital after, I'm pretty sure. So they used Amanda's description of the suspect to create a composite sketch, but the authorities decide not to release it because they don't believe her story. A few neighbors mentioned that Amanda and Sylvia would sometimes argue and be a bit tumultuous. This convinces the officers even further that Amanda is their prime suspect. They think she shot herself in the leg in order to set the scene of an intruder. 5 days after the shooting, Sylvia's autopsy results come back. The medical examiner explains that it was their belief that Sylvia would not have been able to get back up after her first gunshot wound to the head because of where it hit her. Although, I feel like stranger things have happened.
Right.
Like, adrenaline-wise. Like, the whole, like, case of the mother lifting up the car when her son is under it. Or, like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I feel like that's a good comparison. That your, like, body kind of keeps going because of the adrenaline.
Absolutely, yeah.
But it doesn't seem that that was taken into account. And I'm not even a medical examiner, but what do I know?
Look, we're not professionals no, over here,
all right? I'm just spitballing. just theorizing. So Amanda's medical report comes back saying that the results were inconclusive as to whether she was physically assaulted. They couldn't find any physical evidence of bodily fluids. But it's important to note that many rapists don't ejaculate, and it's more difficult to tell whether an adult female has been raped. So that just because they came back inconclusive doesn't mean that she hadn't been.
Right.
And, I mean, there was a lot of chaos back and forth, so we don't know really, like, how much was able to go on. Like, Sylvia came in the room, there's chaos going on. I mean,
point being is, like, he wasn't able to, like what you're saying right, is,
ejaculate,
like, ejaculate. Like, that's the thing. And, right. Like, what if he was wearing a condom right. and, like, stuff like that,
too. God knows.
I mean, really... this is why we should believe all women.
Right. Right. Like, why would she just make this up? I don't know. Okay. But this is the main thing that really, like, even more so, like, pushed me to do the case because of this whole back and forth.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and it's also said that her gunshot wound in her thigh was consistent with self-inflicted wound at close range. However, if they were struggling with the gun, it would definitely be at close range. And I feel like it would also affect the angle, but it seems like those factors weren't really taken into consideration. Because, like, say you're kind of, like, with somebody struggling for the gun, couldn't it, like, kind of get in the position where you could be holding it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're, like, and the trigger's pulled. I don't know. Yeah. It seems like at this point that they made up their mind about Amanda and were more so looking for evidence to support it rather than, like, looking at it unbiased.
Well, because she's got two things going against her, right? She's a woman and she's gay.
And she's also black.
And black. Okay, so three. Here we go. So, like, yeah, there you go. So, you got three things going against you. And
Amanda was black and Sylvia was Latina.
Oh, okay. I don't think you mentioned that.
No, earlier. I didn't. Yeah. But, yeah, that's an important thing. Not that
it
shouldn't
matter, but unfortunately, sometimes in cases like these,
especially this was in the mid-90s. Yeah. Like, I mean, we still have issues with it till this day, but the further you go back in time, the more these issues are prevalent.
100%.
But, yeah, gay, minorities, and...
Women.
Women, yeah. So, from here, they look at it as a domestic violence case and continue to interrogate Amanda. They tell her that nothing she said was true and try to coerce her into admitting her guilt. Sylvia's family also tell authorities that Sylvia and Amanda did not have a good relationship and it had not been going well as of late. They also said that Amanda was sometimes abusive towards Sylvia, but it was never reciprocated. Overall, they really seem to believe that Amanda was guilty. They also shun Amanda at Sylvia's funeral. Amanda said that she wasn't able to sit with the family, and when she tried to comfort Sylvia's mother, she was basically ignored. But I couldn't find any, like, information on, like, how accepting Sylvia's family had been, because I think that could definitely be a factor in the entire case as well.
100%.
Like, how their family treated the fact that she was gay.
Yeah.
But I couldn't find anything on that, so.
Absolutely.
At this time, the media also breaks the story and it becomes front page news. Simultaneously, a serial rapist is entering residences in Park Slope and surrounding neighborhoods and attacking women. Some women were reporting rapes in broad daylight in Prospect Park, and some were also victims of robberies similar to Amanda's story when they were ran up on and pushed into their home by someone holding a gun. Mm. But they don't believe that this person is connected to Amanda and Sylvia because he's not killing any other victims.
Sure, but to play devil's advocate, as always, like, I don't think he went in intentionally wanting to kill somebody, you know? Probably just felt like it was a means to an end, right? So, like, yeah, even though this serial rape, this other if it isn't the same person, they still need to be looking into their cases if it's all tied together.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And the LGBT community in Park Slope rallies around Amanda already having a strained relationship with police, which we still see till this to this day. Okay, so the tense relations between some lesbian groups and police in Park Slope were still reeling from an incident in April 1994, where a lesbian reported that she was raped in Prospect Park, but a police official suggested that detectives had doubts about her story, which was later denied by the apartment, or was later denied by the department. So basically, they like just didn't believe this woman who said she had gotten raped in Prospect Park. So they already weren't trusting the police to do their job and figure things out. They believed that detectives were targeting Amanda and pinning this murder on her to avoid having to find the real killer. Groups representing the area's large gay and lesbian population said the failure to find Sylvia's killer reflected the police department's laxity in pursuing crimes against lesbians. And they accused the police of downplaying the killing as a crime of passion. And their choice of partner wasn't the only romance-related factor that would influence the authorities. They soon found out that Amanda's ex, Trelane McKinney, had a tumultuous past with the couple. So Trelane had dated Amanda for 3 years right before Sylvia, and after Amanda met Sylvia, she invited her to move in with the couple. So it seems like maybe they were trying a poly situation. But Trelane notes that there was major competition between her and Sylvia for Amanda's affections. So it seems like Amanda kind of liked them both and wanted to try like a thing, but they both wanted the attention of Amanda more so. Eventually, Trelane and Amanda end up splitting up, and it's not a pretty breakup. Trelane was bitter about the breakup, the fact that Amanda was still with Sylvia, and she was allegedly known to have a temper, which actually not allegedly because she's in one of the episodes I watched, and she admits that she did have a temper.
Oh, wow, okay.
There were rumors of her saying, if she can't have Amanda, then no one will. She's
nice. That always works out really well.
Yeah. She still often came to the apartment, and neighbors reported hearing loud arguments. And in a fight at a softball game, Prospect Park, Trelane had threatened to kill Amanda, or wait, Trelane had threatened to kill Sylvia due to a bad call and pent-up aggression about Amanda.
Man.
Those were the last words she ever spoke to Sylvia. From there, they definitely believe that Trelane is a suspect, and she may have worked with Amanda in the crime, worked alone, or even hired a hit on Sylvia. Another layer comes into play when the car that was taken by the intruder was also found on a side street in Brooklyn very close to Trelane's house. Mm. A forensic workup was done on the car, but they couldn't find anything. And although they have two suspects, they don't have any evidence that can back up their claims. It's all circumstantial evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Amanda is called in for another round of more intense questioning where she claims the police were screaming at her and breaking her down until she questions just taking the blame, but she ends up holding out and not, even though she thinks about, hey, this would be easier if I was just like, yes, I did it. She stands to her truth.
Yeah, good.
Amanda also takes a polygraph test and passes. They also question Trelane and treat her the same as Amanda. Trelane was outed by the media to her work colleagues, who began to call her a murderer and use homophobic slurs towards her. 2 months after the murder, 26-year-old Tony Harrison was arrested for the series of rapes of women in Park Slope and surrounding areas. However, he does not fit the description. He's a tall black man, and we're looking for a shorter Latino man. He also doesn't fit the MO and has no evidence of being connected to the case. All right, so 9 months after the incident, a man shot a queer woman named Gabrielle Kearns in the head while she was getting out of her SUV in Fort Greene, Brooklyn, which isn't too far from Park Slope. which isn't too far from Park Slope. Then he robbed her. She luckily survived the incident, and 19-year-old Alex Villanueva, also known as Little Gotti, is arrested.
Mm.
He's known in the streets for shooting people and robbing people. To top it off, he looks exactly like the sketch made from Amanda's description of Sylvia's murderer. They run a ballistics test on the gun that Alex used to shoot the woman and compare it to the bullet casings found at Sylvia's crime scene, and it comes back as a match. So after this, Alex was brought in for questioning and gave information that only someone who was at the murder scene of Sylvia would know. He also says that he stole the car and parked it by the probation officer's office, which by chance was by Trelane's apartment. He also confesses to the May 1995 execution-style murder of Michael Terrell. Amanda is also able to pick him out of a lineup, and it's clear that Amanda had been telling the truth and was never the one who murdered Sylvia.
Mm.
Prior to his court date, Alex claimed he was simply a hitman hired to do his job, but on the stand, he changes his statement and says that he acted alone. On July 20th, 1996, over a year after the incident, Alex Villanueva was charged with the murder of Sylvia Lugo, in addition to attempted murder and rape. He was sentenced to 50 years to life in prison. Advocates for gay and lesbian rights continued to criticize the police department's handling of the case, saying that was only solved because the police stumbled onto the confession. If the police had in fact conducted a thorough investigation and not operated under an assumption, they would have caught this man before another innocent person was injured, says Christine Quinn, executive director of the Gay and Lesbian Anti-Violence Project. Amanda continues to work as a social worker and says that the trauma of the incident has caused her to forget a lot of her relationship with Sylvia, and she's working to get those memories back. Amanda and Sylvia's friends and family still bear the emotional scars of this case to this day. The day that a man decided unprovoked that he wanted to rape a queer woman and kill her girlfriend. Mm. Sylvia's friends remember her as a hero and one that should never be forgotten. And that is the short, sweet, but important case of Sylvia Lugo and Amanda Leach.
Wow.
Had you ever heard of that one?
No, I hadn't, actually.
But, like, I feel like I was interested, obviously, from the jump about, like, the fact that it was in Park Slope and I'm in that area a lot. But then once I saw the, like, mishandling of the case and them trying to, like, kind of, like, pin it on this woman and just the whole, you know. And I didn't know that Park Slope was such an important area in, like, lesbian history, mm-hmm. which is super interesting as well. So,
yeah,
absolutely. I learned a lot from this case, and I thought it was very interesting, and I'm glad that Amanda didn't ever get actually, like, formally convicted of the crime.
Sure.
Even have to go to trial or anything.
No, absolutely.
Like, it was kind of by luck, but, yeah. like, the fact that he went and did something else and got caught.
Yeah.
But, and I feel like if it wasn't for that, they would have continued to try to pin it on Amanda and eventually, like, found a way to do it.
Well, and, you know, unfortunately, I feel like a lot of these types of stories, like, you know, queer women of color tend to get buried underneath, mm-hmm. you know, other cases that may be deemed as more quote-unquote important, mm-hmm. right? But they are all important,
yeah.
and it's important to know the history and mm-hmm. hopefully not have this happen again.
I know.
And especially, like, since it was, like, in the mid-90s, you
right.
know? I feel like because just, like, with Paul, like, us talking about Paul's case a couple of weeks ago, I feel like so much of that is, like, similarly, it's like, I'm from Houston. I should mm-hmm. know about this. I had
right.
never heard anything about it,
yeah.
right? I mean, you know, all that's, you know.
I mean, obviously, there's so many cases that it's hard to hear about them all. But I do think the fact that they were queer women of color probably affected the... I mean, it does seem that it got media attention, at least in the area at the time of. But it was, like, negative media attention because it was very much, like, pinning it as this love triangle gone wrong, this scorned lover, like, that whole, like, spin on it, when really the whole time she was like, I literally, somebody broke into, or, like, pushed us into the home, assaulted us, killed my partner, and now I'm getting pinned for the murder. Like, that's very
right.
dramatic.
Yeah. Oh. Well, I'm glad that he was finally caught, and I'm, and mm-hmm. again, I'm glad that she didn't have to go through the trauma of dealing with the trial.
Right.
And I'm glad that there was some justice.
Yeah, I agree.
That was served.
Yeah.
Well, do you want to do a little palate cleanser?
Yeah, sure. So I just started watching the new season of The Circle today, which I realized there was a new season.
Interesting work.
So,
that's the one where they're, like, two of them or X amount of them are, like, faking something,
well, yeah,
right?
People, so it's, like, people go into this, like, apartment building and they have to just, like, be in their little apartments alone the whole time.
Similar to, like, Love is Blind, where
right.
it's, like, you're just in your little pod.
Right. And they, it's a kind of, like, through, like, a, they're made up, like, the Circle social media, so they all talk to each other, like, through the screens. I was wondering if this was created because of COVID or if it was created before COVID and it just, like, worked out that mm-hmm. it was very easy to film during COVID because they've came out with, like, three seasons
yeah.
since it first came out, or four. But yeah, so they're all in their little apartments talking to each other through this, like, social media app.
Mm-hmm.
And some you can choose going in whether you want to be yourself or whether you want to, like, pretend to be someone else. And basically you're supposed to, like, fool people into, like, trusting you and blah, blah, blah. And somebody gets voted off every now and then and, like, new people come in. I forget what the prize is, but it's an interesting watch. It's fun.
Seems a little, like, Big Brother-esque mm-hmm. meets
yeah.
isolation.
Yeah. Meets COVID.
Yeah, meets COVID.
Yeah. I mean, I want to see when the first season came out.
I feel like that. I think the first season came out, like, right before COVID happened.
Yeah, I want to say, did they predict it? It came out January 1st, January 15th, 2020. So it was before shit shut down. I'm like, they predicted it. They knew.
Well, it's just interesting. I don't even know if they predicted
it. I know.
But it is, I mean, like, it is an interesting concept, right? Of, like, one, what does it do to the mental psyche? Like, they have done... People have done plenty of studies what isolation does to the human psyche, especially on, like, prisoners, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But then, on top of that, you are still interacting with people, but you don't get to be face-to-face. So,
mm-hmm.
sort of, in a way, like, they probably had a more controlled test of what all of us in isolation, how it actually went down.
Yeah.
So.
For sure.
Interesting.
What's yours?
I just finished the first season of Julia, which was fantastic on HBO. It's about Julia Child and how her show, The French Chef, like, went into syndication because no show had really done that previously. You know, there wasn't, like, there weren't nationwide channels.
Right.
So it's very fascinating. It is a little triggering because, you know, it's, like, set in the, I think it's set in the 50s or early 60s. I can't quite remember. But, you know, it's, like, a lot of sexism, a lot of misogyny.
Oh, yeah.
But just finished season one. Very excited for season two. I don't know when that's going to be, but very excited. Mm. And, yeah, it was a good time. I very much enjoyed it.
Fun. Cool.
Well, Ray, do you want to tell the good people where they can find us?
Sure. At The Midnight Record on TikTok and Instagram, at TMR Pod on Twitter, and themidnightrecord@gmail.com.
Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on all of your favorite podcast listening platforms. It really helps us out, and it lets us know that we're still doing good for you, which we really appreciate.
Come on.
And also please don't forget to check out our new Patreon. We've got a couple of minisodes up on there. Soon we'll start putting up TV series reviews or book reviews, things like that. And, some more polls for y'all to vote on. So please check that out. Oh, and also don't forget to check out our merch store. I don't think we like hardly ever plug that, but we do have like,
but do it.
Tote bags and stickers on there, which are very cute. So
they're fun.
Yeah. I think that's it.
I think so too.
Well, until next time.
I'll see you at midnight.
I'll see you at midnight.
You better.
Okay. I will.